You're now listening to the TaxSmart REI Podcast, the number one tax podcast for real estate investors.
Your source for all things real estate, accounting, and tax. Here, we reveal our secrets that can save you thousands in taxes, streamline your accounting process, and help grow your business. Stay tuned to hear insightful interviews with industry experts, successful real estate investors, and current clients on what strategies they use to grow their business and how they steer clear of Uncle Sam.
Hey, thanks for tuning into this week's episode of the TaxSmart REI Podcast. Today, Ryan and I break down the tax treatment of repairs and maintenance expenses versus capital improvements and how to maximize tax savings, including the tax differences between repairs and capital improvements, how to maximize tax savings with three must-know IRS safe harbors, how to navigate capital improvements with the bar tests, and more. If you want to maximize your tax deductions on your repair and renovation costs, this is a must-listen episode. We'll be diving into all that in just 1 minute. Hey, are you ready to discover how to use real estate to build tax-free wealth? Well, this year, we're taking our annual summit to the next level by incorporating wealth-building strategies alongside our traditional tax and legal insights. Thus, we proudly introduced the 2024 Tax, Legal, and Wealth Summit for real estate investors taking place May 17th, 18th, and 19th, right from the comfort of your own home. This extraordinary free 3-day virtual event is meticulously designed to arm you with the strategies the 1% use to cultivate tax-free wealth through real estate. Whether you want to build, safeguard, or grow your wealth, this summit is your golden ticket. Visit www.taxandlegalsummit.com to reserve your free tickets today. Again, that's www.taxandlegalsummit.com to reserve your free tickets. We'll see you there, but for now, we'll dive right into today's episode. All right, and we're back. Okay, so first things first, repairs versus improvements. Why does it even matter in the first place, right? Well, the thing is, when you have a repair or a maintenance expense, you're able to deduct the entire expense in full in that year and be able to capture the tax benefits of that expense all at one shot. In addition to that, you get to avoid depreciation recapture. So as a general rule, okay, we generally, as real estate investors, prefer to have our expenses categorized or our costs categorized as repairs or maintenance expenses rather than capital improvements. And that's because with a capital improvement, you have to capitalize and then depreciate the cost, the renovations, what have you, over an extended period of time, whether it be 5, 15, or 27 and a half, or 39 years in the case of commercial property. And then on top of that, when you sell the property, you do have to consider depreciation recapture, whether you defer it or whatnot, using a 1031 exchange or what have you, it's still consideration. It's still something you have to navigate. So again, as a general rule, this is important because as real estate investors, we want to classify as much of our costs associated with keeping our property up to date and in good use as repairs and maintenance, okay?
So we then need to kind of break down a couple different topics, which would be placed in service, right? So placed in service date is important for us as we start to, in just a moment here, talk about the safe harbors. And the safe harbors, which we'll get to, there's three of them given to us by the IRS, trying to help taxpayers essentially simplify, once you've got your property placed in service, does your cost, your tangible property cost, fit into one of these safe harbors, which is going to be a repair deduction compared to something that you then have to capitalize and depreciate. So before I get there, just a big kind of broad topic that I want to talk about. So placing a property in service. Sometimes, for example, you might acquire a property, let's say May 1st. Then you might say spend a month making some renovations, some improvements, and let's call it $25,000. Okay. Then you might have all the renovations completed. You've got your property clean, your property's ready to go and advertised on June 1st, right? So if all that $25,000 is for the renovation kind of before it's placed in service, meaning available to be rented or rent ready, there's a lot of synonymous words you could use. All $25,000 of that is going to be a capitalized improvement and is not going to be something we look at the safe harbors, which I'm about to get to. Okay, so just want to give that broad kind of comment first. Anything before the property is placed in service, capital improvement, everything after, right after June 1st in my example, then we're going to be evaluating using one of these three safe harbors. So just want to comment on that briefly. Safe harbors, any costs after the property is placed in service. Okay, so from there, we've got three main ones. And the first one I'll start with is the de minimis safe harbor. Then we'll talk about the routine maintenance safe harbor. And then Tom's going to take the third one. He'll explain that. So the first one is the de minimis safe harbor. I will just say this is the most common safe harbor that's out there. And this basically says you can take up to $2,500 of tangible property costs. Okay. So one quick example, right? You've got a new microwave that needs to be installed. Call it $500. Great. $2,500 or less. That meets it. $500. That's just repair expense. De minimis safe harbor meets that. But the other example we could use to say it's not going to meet would be something like air conditioner. Say it's $6,000 for a new air conditioner. Okay. That's not going to work. It's over $2,500. Not there. Okay. So one thing you'll want to be careful of, which we'll talk a little bit more as we move to, is you need to get itemized, detailed invoices if you're working with a contractor. We'll talk about that more in just a little bit too. But remember, anything under $2,500 kind of per tangible property, yes, that can meet the de minimis safe harbor. Okay. The second one I'll talk about is the routine maintenance safe harbor. This is probably what I would say is the second most common, right? And this basically says anything that you expect as a project to do 2 times in a 10-year period, you can then use that and say that is a routine maintenance safe harbor. So for example, a really common one is carpet. Carpet as an overall investment into properties are becoming less and less popular. More and more people are moving to like luxury vinyl plank. That's a side comment. But at the end of the day, let's pretend that you're putting in carpet at your property. Okay, say it's 2024. If you then expect to put in carpet again in that 10-year period, call it 2030, 6 years later, that is now 2 times in a 10-year period. And that would be something that would qualify for the routine maintenance safe harbor simply to upkeep and keep your property operating in a good quality condition. Another example of that could be something like paint, interior paint specifically, right? At my properties, it's usually every turnover or every couple turnovers. We're expecting to redo the interior paint, get a fresh coat on there to make things look nice, try to get as high a price as possible for rent and have a good quality space for our tenants. So again, expecting to do that 2 times in a 10-year period, that would be yet another example. Now, something that probably isn't going to work again is putting in like an HVAC system, a new air conditioner, right? You probably don't expect to do that 2 times in a 10-year period. That's generally not going to work. Or say a new roof, right? A new roof, you might be doing that hopefully once every 20 years, okay? So just some examples of things that we're trying to kind of help people understand what really falls into these two. Again, for me, just the de minimis safe harbor being the most common, $2,500 or less, and routine maintenance. Any project you're going to do 2 times in a 10-year period. Tom, you want to take the third one?
Yep. Before I go into there, I just want to kind of reiterate why these safe harbors are so important. So this is all part of the tangible property regulations that came out around 2014, which is like every time I look at the document and how big it is, there's like hundreds of pages in this thing. So to look at all, everything in the repairs and versus capital improvement, a conversation is incredibly complex and detailed. However, what these safe harbors do is allow us as investors, as well as CPAs, simplify the process by saying, okay, great. If it's under $2,500 per invoice line item, great. It's de minimis safe harbor. We're going to go ahead and deduct it. If you're going to have to do it more than twice in a 10-year period, go ahead and deduct it. All right. So this is why it's important. This helps simplify an incredibly complex topic or area of the tax code. All right. So I'm going to take the third one here. It's going to be the safe harbor for small taxpayers. Now, in practice, we don't see this too often, and you'll see why as I dive into it. And I think it's because it's not really been adjusted for inflation, and you know, it just that's the reason why it's really not seen so much. But this primarily benefits taxpayers with relatively small properties and relatively small amounts of repairs and maintenance, almost nothing at this point. All right, so quick details on how this works. So you can deduct using Safe Harbor for small taxpayers annual expenses for repairs, maintenance, and improvements, as long as they don't exceed the lesser of, so less than, $10,000 or 2% of the unadjusted basis of the property. And like you said, when you look at $10,000, right, $10,000 is not that much anymore in terms of total expenses that you might have on a property. So on a $400,000 property, that would only be $8,000. So that would be the max you can deduct. So yeah, this is why this isn't so powerful anymore. And there's a few other things that we need to understand here. There's a $1 million limit on the unadjusted basis, and the unadjusted basis does exclude land, land improvements, and personal property identified through a cost segregation study. So that is important to note. And also, the annual gross income of the landlord must be less than $10 million for the 3 preceding years. And I know for a lot of us landlords out here, that's probably not going to be the case for us. But really what I think hurts this particular safe harbor is the small amount, $10,000 or 2% or 2% of the unadjusted basis. Most of the time you receive repairs, maintenance, and capital improvements exceed that $10,000 limit, which does often kill this strategy. So we're not going to spend too much more time on this just because it's not going to be so relevant, but it's just something to be aware of if you have a property that maybe it does impact. All right. So now we're moving away from the expense safe harbors, which again, allow you to expense some of these items without really having to think much more about it than that. However, once you start to get out of these safe harbors, you now have to start asking yourself the question, is this really a repair or maintenance expense, or is it a capital improvement? And the answer is not always as clean cut as you would think. So what the tax code does, what the tangible property regulations did for us, is gave us three categories to help us determine if it's a capital improvement. That's going to be a betterment, an adaptation, or a restoration. So we're going to hit each one of these, and then we're just going to keep on moving through. Hey, are you tired of working with generalist CPAs that tell you you can't use the real estate professional status, the short-term rental loophole, or cost segregation studies, or worse, have no idea what these things are? If so, it's time to elevate your game and work with a CPA firm that gets it. Here at Hull CPA, we've worked with thousands of investors, helping them save millions of dollars in taxes through proactive tax strategy and planning, tax preparation, and outsourced accounting solutions. So if you're ready to elevate your game, make tax filing painless, and save thousands of dollars in taxes, what are you waiting for? Just head on over to www.therealestatecpa.com/podcast to request an initial consultation today. We are accepting clients for the 2023 and 2024 tax years. So if you're looking to make a change, you have nothing to lose. Again, you can request an initial consultation by visiting www.therealestatecpa.com/podcast. We look forward to hearing from you and learning more about your situation and how we can help. But for now, we'll dive right back into today's episode. All right, so betterments. All right, so a betterment is defined as enhancements that fix a material condition or defect that's pre-existing or rising during acquisition. So a good example of a betterment would be adding an extension to the building or upgrading machinery to increase its capacity. Now, there's not really much machinery, of course, with most properties, but basically you are materially enhancing the property to significantly increase its value or extend its useful life. So tax court cases generally hint that the thresholds for this are around 25% of improvement or efficiency, inefficiency or capacity. Okay, as being material, as this is what would make it a betterment. Now, I think you're probably going to see this more so probably in the world of commercial real estate than perhaps residential, but you could certainly see in residential. I don't want to throw that out completely, but as we kind of go through this, it kind of becomes clear that this is probably going to see something more commercial or industrial, what have you. So that's a betterment. And if you have a betterment, it has to be capitalized and depreciated.
So the second one, from BAR, right? B-A-R. So the second one in the A is adaptation. This one's really easy to understand. This is just expenses related to changing the unit of property, right? You're adapting the property to, for example, going from a warehouse into a real retail space, or a warehouse into an apartment building, or a retail into apartments, or whatever it is, right? You're basically completely changing the type of use of this property, adapting it for a completely different type of thing. At least from my experience and my clients that I've worked with, I haven't seen a whole lot of this. I've actually seen more of the B and the R. But Tom, do you want to take restorations?
Yeah, absolutely. Before I dive into that, I think you might see adaptations more and more as these office buildings start to get transitioned perhaps into apartments. I think this will become more relevant. And usually, though, that's happening in a lot of cities, but that would be a great example of an adaptation to your point. So next, we're going to move on to restorations. This is going to be the third one out of the BAR test. So a restoration is defined as expenses that return a property to its original state or adapt it following a significant deterioration. All right. So an example of restoration would be repairing an entire roof or an extensive overhaul of a property's plumbing system. And even smaller scale examples of this could include significant improvements to an electrical system. So restorations, kind of just to sum that up right there, basically, if you're replacing something completely or you're doing a significant upgrade, you're going to be looking at a restoration in this case. And again, everything in the BAR test, whether it's a betterment, adaptation, or restoration, does have to be capitalized and does have to be depreciated. I think, Ryan, you have a good litmus test perhaps for this that kind of help the listeners understand, like, is there a way to simplify this process a little bit?
Yeah, especially for when we think about betterments, restorations, I think in particular, I think there's like a 30% threshold as we've looked at court cases and things like that. If we have a total change for a unit of property that we're looking at, say, for example, we're looking at an HVAC system that we've kind of talked about. If you've got a fourplex, you had kind of mentioned, Tom, like big properties, commercial, so forth. If we are going to say have a fourplex and we have four different air conditioners, if we only change one of them, so now we're at 25%, that's essentially going to be what I would say not meeting betterment or restoration or adaptation. That is then, because it doesn't meet one of the bar tests, that is going to be considered a repair expense, kind of like almost like what we would do for the safe harbor, right? If we met one of those. So there is that little bit of a litmus test. And again, this really does primarily apply to larger properties, essentially fourplexes above. You've got kind of multiple different aspects of a unit, but that 30% or less threshold, that's what I would want people listening to keep in mind. If we were changing 30% or less of a unit of property, that could then be not meeting the bar test, therefore could be a repair deduction.
That's an excellent point. And another overall point here, I think we want to make clear is that just because, and Ryan kind of alluded to it, just because an expense or a cost or expenditure does not necessarily meet one of the repair safe harbors or maintenance safe harbors, doesn't necessarily automatically make it a capital improvement. It could still be a repair, it could still be a maintenance expense, despite the fact not meeting one of those safe harbors. The safe harbors are there just to kind of give us clear guidelines or bright line tests on what is definitely going to be a repair or maintenance expense. So you could still have a cost that may not fit under those safe harbors, but could still be expense. So just be mindful of that. And then that's what the betterment adaptations and restorations, aka bar test, is there for. It's there to help you then determine, okay, well, if it doesn't meet these safe harbors, does it meet one of these betterment adaptations or restoration tests? If it doesn't meet one of these betterment adaptations or restoration tests, then chances are it could still be a repair and maintenance expense. So just something to keep in mind here as you're navigating your expenditures on your properties, how to kind of think through some of this stuff. Now, I want to just jump into some practical implications and examples of this, just to kind of flesh it out just a little bit more. So there's going to be a distinction between extensive remodels, which are typically betterments, and cosmetic updates, which are typically considered repairs or maintenance expenses. So a betterment would be, say, for example, a complete replacement of the building's facade, whereas a repair would be painting or minor patching of the facade, for example. So you have to ask yourself, I guess a good way to kind of think of this too is like, this is somewhat a common sense test to an extent. Like if you're doing a major renovation, you should be asking yourself the question, how much of this is really going to be capital improvements, right? But if you're doing minor things, you're more or less looking, okay, is this a repair? You're looking to clarify that. So that's kind of some examples there. Now, something interesting about some of this stuff too is that, like, say, for example, say you had a steel door that was replaced with a wooden door due to the unavailability of a steel door, then it would still be classified as repair and not an improvement. So that's just an interesting tidbit there around some of the obscurities of how this stuff works. So as you're going through this, you definitely want to be talking to your CPAs, talking to your advisors whenever you're doing major renovations, especially when you're doing major renovations, to make sure all this stuff is properly categorized so you are maximizing your tax benefits. Again, in general, as real estate investors, we want repair and maintenance expenses because we can deduct everything in that year, receive our tax benefits, and not have to deal with depreciation recapture. And not that we're scared of depreciation recapture, but if we can make our lives a little bit easier, why not? And when you have to capitalize and depreciate something over time, not only are you not able to deduct everything in full today, of course, there's bonus depreciation, which is at 60%, and that can help with that 5- and 15-year property. But if we have to capitalize structural components, structural improvements, that's usually over 27 and a half and 39 years, and that's spread out. That is not as beneficial to us. And then on top of that, we have depreciation recapture. All right. So that kind of in a nutshell is how to look at repairs versus improvements. We have the safe harbors, we have the bar tests, and this is how you navigate the situation. Ryan, before we dive into some documentation and IRS requirements, was there anything else you wanted to add? I know you recently did for the Tax Prep Bootcamp, which we're going to have another one coming up in the future, but you recently added a new module to that in the recent one. Was there anything particular in that module that you felt may be worth bringing up here for the listeners?
Yeah, one thing that people should keep in mind, what I said just a few minutes ago about anything before the property is placed in service, in general, that's going to be a capital improvement that we're going to need to depreciate. One nuance within that is what we might call consumables. And this is really common for short-term rentals, vacation rentals, right? So before you're getting ready to actually place the property in service for a short-term rental, you might be buying things like toilet paper and paper towels and soap and dishwasher detergent and maybe laundry detergent, right? All of these things that you might think of as you use it one time and then you throw it away. right? But something to just be mindful of too that you might be thinking could count would be like towels or linens and things like that. You're going to use that multiple times. So to me, that's not something that would necessarily fall under consumables. It is normally that kind of paper product or kind of a soap product in general. So that's one nuance to the placed in service kind of things before. And then the second thing to think about is furniture. Furniture, again, normally with short-term rentals, you're going to be buying some new couches, some new tables, some new beds, some new things like that. And so furniture is going to be either a 5 or 7 year property, which is eligible for bonus depreciation. So you might be listening to this and being like, hey, shoot, anything that I buy before the property is placed in service, I just have to depreciate that over 39 years. Again, we're talking about a short-term rental, but not necessarily, right? Keep in mind, I'm not even thinking about a cost seg at the second, but any furniture you buy is going to be eligible for that bonus depreciation. So keep that in mind, right? We're here in 2024, so 60% with the current law, right? Maybe that changes, but 60% that you can accelerate today. So just keep that in mind too. As you're buying furniture, 5 or 7 year property, we do get to bonus depreciate that in the first year. So it's not all doom and gloom just because you have to capitalize something.
Right, right. And I have to imagine that after the property is placed in the service, say you have an Airbnb, a short-term rental, what have you, if you do have to buy a new piece of furniture, maybe a couch or something like that, and if it does fall under $2,500, then you would have to just use the de minimis safe harbor. So these are kind of the common questions we get and we see as we're navigating these situations with clients. So hopefully this is helps clear some stuff up. But now, you know, of course, there is no free lunch with the IRS ever. Okay. If there is, you guys can let me know where that free lunch is. But we have to document some stuff. What do we have to document for the IRS for all this stuff?
So the simple one is a receipt, right? Imagine you're doing your own repairs and improvement. Great. You go to Home Depot, Lowe's, Menards, wherever you're going for your hardware store, keep that receipt. And just a little best practice, I think everyone should be digitizing things, right? You might have a fire and you've got this, you know, piece of paper receipt. It could go anywhere, right? Or if you're busy, you're a busy person, it just might get accidentally thrown away. So I think for me, just best practice as you think about documentation, you get into the car after your Home Depot trip, take a picture on your phone, upload it to something like Dropbox, Google Drive, somewhere in the cloud, and name it however is best for you. But that's kind of a simple example with your maybe receipts that you're doing. Another example that I think is actually a little bit of a nuance is let's actually pretend that you've got a property a year after it's placed in service, just for example, and you've got a contractor just before your busy season. I'm kind of thinking of a short-term rental. And maybe you decide, hey, I need to do like $10,000 worth of renovations. Okay. Maybe you've got a general contractor. They're just going to kind of oversee and do everything for you to make things easy, right? If that contractor at the end of the project says, hey, total project cost, 10 grand, right? They send you an invoice. If that has one line item on it that simply says remodel projects, total cost, 10 grand, that is not going to help you. Sure, you have an invoice for 10 grand. That's great. But within that 10 grand might've been, for example, hey, we put in a new microwave for $750. Hey, we put in a new toilet for $500. Hey, we put in and updated all your ceiling fans for $1,000, right? All the various projects they did should be broken out on that invoice, and they need to be saying what it is and then what is the cost for that. Because now everything that's underneath that $2,500 de minimis, right? Now we can deduct all of those things. But if they don't, back to my original example, everything is essentially going to be a capitalized improvement, and we're just going to have to depreciate that over something like 39 years. So that's not beneficial for you. What's most beneficial for you is simply go back to the contractor or do it proactively. Have them itemized by project and put an associated cost to that.
No, absolutely. That point is super important because, yeah, I know when I was advising a lot of clients, we'd see this all the time. We'd get this just big bill, like $35,000 or $36,000, whatever, just one line item, like kitchen repair, and we're like, or kitchen maintenance, whatever it would be. And it's just like, we can't really do much with that other than capitalize it, which we just discussed is not the most favorable, but like Ryan broke down, if you can get it broken down by line item, some of that or most of it could qualify for the minimus safe harbor. So that's important to understand.
So one other nuance too to keep in mind, some people think they're kind of smart where they are going to have their contractor split out as we think about, you know, the invoice documentation. They think they're smart because they're going to have their contractor put all the different projects and the materials in different lines. And then they're going to say, hey, oh, contractor, put your labor on a different line. And therefore, they think they don't have to allocate that labor to all the projects. That's just not true, right? If you've got labor on here, you need to effectively allocate that to the different projects because it's labor and materials that is going into that project. So just be careful trying to get too cute or smart that thinking you can simply put it on a different line item. And therefore, that's going to keep everything less than $2,500. So don't do that. Just have them allocate it, time and materials, all into kind of the single one. Otherwise, you're just going to have to go back and allocate it for tax purposes.
That's a super important point. You definitely don't want to get too gimmicky with this because there are guidelines. And if you trip yourself up, you might find yourself in hot water at some point. Before we wrap things up here, I just wanted to throw in a point that bookkeeping is really important to everything we just discussed today. Because if you're miscategorizing things or you're having a bookkeeper who maybe doesn't know what they're doing, miscategorize things within your account, you might be giving your CPA, who's going to prepare your tax returns, a P&L that has repairs that should be really capital improvements and they could be deducting it the wrong way, or they could be putting repairs as capital improvements on your P&L or on your balance sheet, which could be problematic. So just something to keep in mind there when you're doing your bookkeeping. You want to make sure this is buttoned up the right way and you're not running into any issues there. Also, something to point out there is that it could be a red flag on your tax return, right? If all of a sudden you have a huge, you know, outlying repair expense, well, that could be real in some cases, but from what I've seen, oftentimes people are miscategorizing things. So again, you want to be careful with that. And another thing we see people doing wrong too, just another quick tip, is that we'll see people sometimes they'll have the repairs and maintenance expenses deducted on their return, and then they're actually capitalizing them too, doing both. So they're double dipping. So just something to keep an eye out. Just want to throw those two tidbits in there. But we're going to go ahead and wrap this up for today, this repair and maintenance discussion. But just to kind of recap the importance of all this and kind of recap what we discussed. So long story short, repairs and maintenance expenses can be deducted in full in the year they're incurred, which is preferential, because it's going to help you minimize your taxable income. And if you're using things like cost segregation studies, things like that, it's going to help you maximize the loss from that property in any given year. Whereas with capital improvements, you have to capitalize and depreciate those usually over several years, even if there's bonus depreciation, because these days it's at 60%. And then you're going to have to face depreciation recapture later on down the line. And yes, that can be mitigated. But if we could avoid it to begin with, that is preferential. So we have the three safe harbors, the de minimis safe harbor, by far the most popular, $2,500 per invoice line item or less. You get to deduct it. Routine maintenance safe harbor, you have to repair something or fix something with twice within a 10-year period, you're able to deduct it. Then you have the small safe harbor for taxpayers that's rarely used at this point, but it exists. Then you have the bar test, betterment, adaptations, and restoration to help understand, well, if it doesn't fall into the de minimis safe harbor, right? Is it really a capital improvement or can it still be classified as a repair or maintenance expense? If it doesn't meet the bar test, then it's probably going to be a repair or maintenance expense, which again is preferential. So if you have questions about anything like this, please do check out Tax Smart Insiders. We have conversations about this type of stuff all the time going on. You can become a Tax Smart Insider by going to www.taxsmartinvestors.com/insiders to sign up today if you're something you're interested in. And, you know, as always, we are taking on clients and we can help you navigate the situation. If you are concerned about it at all, you can go to www.realestatecpa.com/podcast to request an initial consultation today. We'd love to learn more about your situation and how we can help. And last but not least, we are always hiring. So if you're a CPA, EA, and you are looking to make a switch, we are after busy season now. It's officially over. Okay. If you're looking for a fresh start, you want to join a CPA, it's on the cutting edge. You can apply by going to www.therealestatecpa.com/careers, and we'd love to learn more about you too. Ryan, before we wrap this up, any parting words?
Final words would be, make sure that you understand these de minimis safe harbors, and maybe just a shortcut for some of you listening who maybe have been longtime investors. Me, myself, if you're like, where do I start? I hear all this. You start with the safe harbors. And for me, as an investor, I start with the de minimis safe harbor. Okay. A lot of repairs that you're going to do year after year after year are going to meet that. That can oftentimes be a shortcut for you. But again, review all these things. It might not meet the de minimis safe harbor. I'm glad that we started with that because that is, even for me as an investor, kind of my starting point. But you do want to make sure that you understand these. You might not meet one of the safe harbors, but hey, you also might not have been aware before this episode that there are these bar tests that could be applicable to you, especially if you've got larger units, like Tom said, commercial property, big fourplexes and above, apartment buildings, things like that. But at the end of the day, this can provide additional tax savings for you as you go through and understand these.
Absolutely. So that's about it for today. We'll catch you on next week's episode of the Tax Smart REI podcast.
Thanks for listening to today's show. If you enjoyed the show, please find us on iTunes and leave us a review. You can also email us at contact@therealestatecpa.com with any feedback or topic suggestions. We are always taking on new clients, and with the new tax laws in play, you really don't want to navigate this alone. Let us help you save money on taxes and with your accounting and CFO needs. To become a client, navigate to our client page at therealestatecpa.com and fill out a web form with as much detail about your situation as possible. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of your week.